Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
I wrote a short key lesson just prior to the beginning of this talk that helps to summarize what we're going to look at and what we're going to talk about, so I'm going to read it to you. If finding a treasure map was the same as claiming the chest of pearls to which the map pointed, then everyone and anyone who ever read the true writings of any scripture would already have received the riches of the redemption to which they lead. Finding a map is nothing. What you have on this planet is map celebrators, keepers of the map, not keepers of the pearl. And the reason that human beings have become the worshipers of maps and not the majesty that leads them to something completely new and different in themselves is because finding the map and uncovering the pearl requires that a human being actually do something different with his or her life. Not imagine themselves through self-glorifying pictures of individuals who are now ripe with knowledge and who can go and pontificate to anyone on any subject about the pearl, but someone who has done within himself or herself a very distinct work, which we're going to talk about. We're going to look at it in such a clear way, I hope, that you won't be able to mistake how you have lied to yourselves and how, because, and this is always the case, birds of a feather flock together, how human beings who are celebrators of maps, worshippers of distant treasure, get together and in their poverty exchange the imagery and then sated with the sensations of thinking about what they imagine themselves to have, leave one another as they criticize one another and think cruelly towards each other, and then go out and make plans to take from the world what they still want from it. That has nothing to do with the true treasure. So the next idea, and it's an important one, is that you must be prepared to be given all things. You must be prepared to be given all things. Think for a moment what that means, because when we begin to think about ourselves and our religiosity or our spiritual path or whatever it is that we attribute to ourselves, we don't think that we have to be prepared to be given. What we're doing is giving all of ourselves all the things that we think we need to be happy and whole. And the fact of the matter is, that's completely off base. In fact, it's so far off base that most individuals never even recognize that something is off base until there's a bitterness that courses through them, or a fear or a worry of some kind. And then, because of the general malaise of the man or the woman, the misery, that person starts to think, well, maybe I don't quite understand. And then the person will go and try to figure out what to give themselves again. And did you know that giving yourself something is the same thing in our minds as getting rid of things? Meaning, if I get rid of this relationship, if I get rid of this problem that I'm having here or there, that then I will have given myself the peace and the safety that is stolen from me because of him, her, this or that. And a person just does that over and over and over again because they have missed the absolute essential truth. This one story that is never not in front of us. This is what's so amazing. To be asleep spiritually means to actually be in the midst of something and not see it. But ever been in the midst of a relationship that was bad and not see that you'd married a dragon, or that you had gotten involved with people who were as mistaken and wrong as a human being could be, but you didn't see them as that? And then one day there's a certain event that takes place, the blinders come off your eyes, and you realize, you know what? But this is what we say. Look how bad that person is. Look how bad that person is. Never suspecting that something in us that looks at a bad person and takes them as good is in conspiracy with the badness that it took for being good. But it's not a personal conspiracy. No one sits down and says to themselves, today I'm going to get involved with bad people. It's because we're asleep. So we're going to talk about the essential freedom. We're going to have a map. You're going to leave here literally with a map to freedom. Literally. But the map is not the treasure. So it'll be up to you if you want to pack your things, take only the necessary tools, rid yourself of the relationships in your life that want to celebrate maps and worship ideas, and take it upon yourself because something in yourself has made it so abundantly clear that now you understand something, now you can see it. To see the truth is not the same as to have the truth be what sees through your eyes. Not yet. It's the beginning of it, because it's the invitation from truth. It touches you. And it says, will you see this? And then you either agree to see what the truth has requested you to see, or you turn your eyes from it. And may God have mercy on the souls of the individuals who turn their eyes from what truth wants to show them, because when an individual does that, they have decided that they are going to embrace their story as the whole story, and they will have nothing but the misery they have had to that point in their life. And there is no exception to that. It's not my rule. The evidence of our own lives, because of what we have agreed to be without knowing it, points to the fact that there's something essentially wrong, a fundamental mistake in the way we look at life. That's what we can't get over. No one thinks that there's a fundamental mistake in the way I see things. Do you think that? No. You think I have small errors. There are certain things that I don't quite see clearly. And I'm saying to you that there aren't certain things that you don't quite see clearly. The problem, the whole problem, is with the present one who sees in your life, for your life, to what it brings in your life. That's the fundamental error, as you'll see. So I said that you have to be prepared to be given all things. And this was the best example I could come up with this, because I kind of remember this, and maybe you will too. From your youth. Were any of you ever a youth? Some of you just don't look like it to me. Here's a boy, 15 and a half years old, and he's dreaming of a motor scooter. Why does a boy dream of a motor scooter or a motorcycle? Why does a boy dream of that? Can you say F-R-E-E-D-O-M? Freedom. I'll be on my own. Won't be tied to bicycle. remembering how incredibly free it was when you got the bicycle. And his parents, being wise, judicious parents, realize there are certain things that are actually practical and correct in giving this boy what he wishes. But they come to him and they say, we've talked it over, young Harry, and what we've decided is we're going to give you this motorcycle. But it comes with a condition. And the condition is that you must assume the responsibility of bringing your younger brother home after school every day. So you get the motor scooter if you accept the responsibility of taking your younger brother home with you every day after school. No, I don't. No! No! That's not right! Why? Because his mind, filled with the image of freedom, suddenly has something put upon it. He wants freedom without responsibility. And in the deepest meaning of the word, freedom is pure responsibility. Pure responsibility. And he balks and he says, no. No. It's like he's going to show his parents something. Ever do that? No. 3 days later, he comes back. I've been thinking about it. How about Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays? Because we want to make a deal, don't we? Parents say, and this is the point of the story, son, All or nothing, that's the deal with this gift. All or nothing, that's the deal with this gift. Now, I'm saying to you that there can be no freedom unless we accept all that is given to us. There can be no freedom for a human being unless we accept all that is given to us. Think about it. How many of you don't want all that is given to you? Raise your hands. I don't want that moment where that person says that cruel thing. I don't want that condition where I'm going to lose something that I've given my life to or based my whole sense of. I don't want that. I don't want to have to work. I don't want to do that. I don't want most of what I am given in my life. I want only what I want. I want you to be okay. I want everything to come to me with very little effort. And what effort I do make, I want people to notice that I've made it. I want effortless health. I want everyone to respect me. I insist that I have all things at all times the way that I want them. And anything that I don't want, frankly, it's not right. Something or someone has done something wrong, and that's why there is this resistance on my part to life. So I don't want most of what happens to me. And you know that's true. At least half of your life is spent not wanting what has come to you. And I'm asking you to put together in your mind as clearly as you can at the outset of this talk whether or not a person can be free if half of the time of their life they don't want what life has brought to them.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
Certainly, freedom can't be the effort to take control of the condition, to try to change it somehow so that I never have to face that condition again, because anything that a human being has to try to control, we can see, already controls that individual. If pressure pushes me to try to produce situations more to my liking, am I free even if I get the situation I like, or am I the slave of the pressure pushing me to do that? So freedom, real freedom, has to somehow include this all or nothing relationship. Either I accept everything that life brings to me, or I refuse it. Now, the big problem with ideas like this, through time, and I literally mean that through time, I imagine maybe someplace here and there over millennia, there have been a few individuals who have been able to explain under certain circumstances to certain people how it's possible, what's involved in, and what's necessary to see and then work toward uncovering the treasure of true freedom. But by and large, for human beings today, the idea of true freedom is associated with the image that's conditioned in them, that if they simply can feel what they're thinking about, that feeling of freedom is the same thing as freedom. And we know this is not true. So how do I accept all that is given to me? Especially when, for instance, because it goes right to the heart of it, how do I accept everything that's given to me when I look out and I can see something wrong? I'm supposed to accept that? And then, by the way, you have people who become perfect apathy because they take the idea of accepting everything, and in the relationship of their wrong idea with the wrong sense of self they derive from it, they don't do anything. And the filth, the decay, because there is filth in this world. There is decay in this world. It's in the soul. A quality unchanged that surfaces, that remains as it has been when it is dark, does not become something bright and beautiful. It becomes more of what it has been. It becomes incorporated. So that can't be the answer. And that's one of the problems. How do I accept all that's given to me and at the same time be a responsible human being? And my mind is flashing on it, so I have to bring it up. How many of you know people who, when things are going good, will tell you when things are going bad for you, let go and let God? Doesn't it drive you crazy? Doesn't it? And for some, they got a check that day, or they lost a few pounds, or it's a good hair day, or whatever it is for that human being. And they said, let go and let God. And of course, if they could see that you wanted to throttle them at that moment for their insensitivity. But how about switching it now? How about you and I? Where is the one who knows what it means to let go and let God when something that you don't want, when something that life gives you isn't what you want it to be given? Where is the old let go and let God advanced soul then? And you know where it is. Nowhere to be found. And even if at a certain point in a person's development, they actually can remember that idea in the face of something they're given that they don't want, that person is still in a horrific battle, aren't they? Because on one hand, they've got the image of let go and live God, let go and let God, that they're clinging to the image, and so there's a inside of them, because on one hand, everything in them is identified with not wanting what's happened. On the other side, they're going, I should let go, I should let go, I should let go, I should let go. And they're clinging desperately to something that isolates them in one respect as certainly as the other does, as you'll see. So the question then becomes, well, what happens then? How does a person begin this process of letting what happens happen and accepting it when I can see something is not being right? Now listen, this is subtle. The problem is not in life, because that's how we view it. We see what happens as a problem, which is why we don't want it. The problem is not in life. The problem is in me in life. The problem is not in life. By the way, life doesn't have a problem. Can you imagine that? Life doesn't have a problem. And I'll prove that to you in a few minutes when I tell you a certain image. You'll see very clearly why life doesn't have a problem, because this one image covers the whole gamut of it. So the problem is in my idea of freedom. That's the problem. And this is why most people stop their spiritual search. Because I don't want anything other than my idea of freedom. I'm not interested in a freedom that doesn't connect with my idea of being free. Never knowing that it is my idea of freedom that I am a slave and a captive of when life produces contrary results. What else am I a captive of? I can't be a captive of life. Life doesn't take prisoners. So the issue is a fundamental misunderstanding of what I am. But I never get to the fundamental misunderstanding of what I am because I am constantly made a captive of my idea of freedom that will produce and prove to me that I am what I am. Doot, doot. That was Popeye, in case you didn't get it. I am what I am. Lighten up, will you? This is deadly serious in a certain respect, but it doesn't mean that you have to lose your sense of humor. The only reason a person loses their sense of humor, which means they're out of time, caught in time, is because they're identified. Wrong self. Now, Listen to this next key idea. We talked about something in us that has the wrong idea of freedom. Our true nature is an instrument in the great orchestra of change. We are not the conductor of the orchestra. We are an instrument in the great orchestra of change. We are not, as we imagine ourselves to be, the conductor of that orchestra. Sorry, Charlie. Human beings believe they are the orchestrator, the conductor, which is why when one has conducted their life according to certain ideas and principles by which they're going to find freedom, that when freedom is elusive or actually turns into captivity, they become so desperately unpleasant. You tell me what the nature is, the real source of impatience, frustration, resentment, anxiety, anger. Please, you tell me, if not the moment in which the orchestra that you're conducting, in which it's going to end on a beautiful note, certainly turns sour. And there you are, having conducted this whole thing. And what else can happen? It couldn't be you as the conductor that was the problem. You've got a bad string section. The fellow playing the French horn never really learned how to blow the thing properly, or you wouldn't hear what you hear, meaning you wouldn't be feeling what you feel. And then you hate the various parts of the orchestra. And everything in you is filled with negativity that by its presence in you proves to you that somehow or other the problem you're facing has nothing to do with you, because the negativity always finds something outside of you by which to blame for that pain. So if we are not, and we are not, as I said, the conductor, we are the instrument in this orchestra of change, then that means we have a mistaken role. Literally, a mistaken role. We have what we call a personal life. I have a personal life. And if an individual is an instrument in the great orchestra of change, then that means that individual, number one, does not have the personal life that he or she imagines they do. Not that there's anything wrong with a personal life. You'll understand this more clearly as I get through the material. But rather, that an individual has assumed a completely mistaken identity. And the identity the person has assumed, which is the whole of the mistake, is that life is personal. I can see how far away you are. And I'm making this very simple. That's how far removed a human being, that's how far down the wrong road the human creature is. Life is not personal. Real life is, and I'm making, I think, a new word, maybe not. Real life is transpersonal. Not personal, it's transpersonal. Say it another way, and these are words that we all heard. Real life is impersonal. Real life is impersonal. Does that mean I can't be personable to people that I love? No. It means that there's a fundamental order. There's a fundamental story. And unless everything is in the proper order in that story, then the whole story is out of whack, and you get all the bad endings that human beings get when they have a wacky idea about who they are and what they're doing in this world, which is what all human beings have. Real life is transpersonal. And think about this, will you, what it means? What is it? Oh, I'll ask you another question. Have you ever suffered over something that wasn't personal? All you suffer over is stuff that you take personally. Now you say, well, gee, really? Duh? What else would I suffer over if not over personal stuff? And then I ask the question, well, then what is personal stuff? What does it mean, personal things that I suffer over? Here's what it means. It means I am identified with who I have been and what I need to be. That's what personal is. Who I have been, and of course this is the way the person works, all of the extraordinarily, yes or no, the extraordinarily unique things about my life I mean, you have no idea how unique of an individual I have been. And here's the proof. That's the proof. The proof is I suffer like nobody else. Given the right circumstances, the proof of how unique I am is how badly I hurt. Now, can I ask you a question? Do you want to be defined by that kind of dark emotional mental state? But yet, that is what happens to us every single day when this, what we call our life, runs into something in life that smashes into our ideas about how things are supposed to be. And when it smashes into my... Okay, let me ask a question. Does life itself ever smash into itself? Now I'll give you the example I was talking about.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Since I was a boy, I've been thinking about this. Why? What is it about a river or an ocean? What is it about a river that you can sit a stream and watch it? What is it about that body that is so extraordinarily at once profound, peaceful, provocative, promising? At once. Here's this body at the river moving along. What is it that's so mysterious about it? And here's the answer. It's the answer to a question that a person doesn't even actually know that's going on inside of their heart. See, the river is the physical example of capital L life, because it is forever emptying and filling itself simultaneously. You can't look at a spot that isn't emptying itself and filling itself simultaneously. It's never really empty and it's never really full, is it? Come on, think about it. You're looking at water. How many of you like to watch water? Waterfalls. Oh, waterfalls. Your mind can't wrap around the movement. And so it has to yield to the movement in order to take from the movement something it's trying to whisper to you. And I do believe that. I believe that God is never not whispering to the human being. But our minds are so filled with our personal stories that we never have a chance to hear what's being said. Here's it whispering. What's it whispering? Ah, of course. It gives up its place all the time. And there's no word for it. Every aspect, every molecule, every feature, every character, every quality of the river is always empty and full at the same time. How many of you can see what I'm talking about? It requires a little emotion on your part. And some of you, I know you're kind of beat up there. But it requires to be able to see what I'm saying. That's a very emotional thing. Because it is and it isn't. It's the opposites manifested, revealed through movement, of something that really isn't moving at all. Because even though it's in constant flow, it's always being filled right where it is. That's life. That's real life. For us, life is a series of snapshots of the river by which we examine the glitter of a certain light on the water, or which we say that rock ought not be there. That's not life, that's personal. Because it's preference that determines whether the rock ought be there or not, because you loved rocks or hated rocks, or your father was a rock hound and tried to make you into one, or whatever it is that took place. All of a sudden, a person looks at something and everything is right and everything is wrong. And I'm saying that the whole idea of right and wrong is always wrong as long as the person called the self is determining its qualities. But that there is a rightness that has wrongness in quotes in it that isn't personal at all. And that means the wrongness isn't personal, meaning that means which is dark, what is not understood, that which must change. It's not wrong. It's just part of this movement of one thing into another in a constant flow. And the idea of this river, as described, is essential because what happens to us is we think to ourselves, well, if I just accept everything that's given to me, what's going to happen to the things that I want? I mean, the speaker is saying something. I almost can't get my mind around it. Is he saying that I shouldn't want things? Because if I want things, but I'm supposed to accept what life gives me, then what happens when life gives me something that won't give me what I want? I hope you're following this. Because that can't be right. Isn't that right? I mean, that just can't be right. I know it's not right. Look at me. I'm getting angry over it. Look at me. I'm afraid of that idea. See, all the personal life can do is imagine from its person what it needs to provide for itself. That's all you can do. It's a never-ending story inside of that circle of self, of a certain character that, because of conditions in his or her life, has decided that in order to transcend those conditions, they must acquire certain things. They must control certain things. But the person who lives from that person never sees that which is choosing for them, that they take to be their choice that leads to freedom, has nothing whatsoever to do with real freedom, but is based on an unseen captivity of that self wrapped up by those conditions that is always trying to figure out how to escape what it's been. And you, who wishes to escape what you have been, cannot escape what you have been, because it is what you have been that is telling you what you need to do to escape. And it never finds freedom. It finds a thrill. It finds a temporary sensation that seems to be everything one is looking for. But then, because the sensation is predicated on an image brought forward from one's past, and the image runs smack dab into life as it is in its constant movement and can't sustain the image, then the image, instead of the source of freedom, becomes the source of suffering for the person who has identified with it, which means I'm back in prison again. I coined a little phrase when I was thinking about this material. The one who always wants. That's what person is in us. That's what self is. The one who always wants. The one who always wants is itself not a self at all. I know how strongly it feels like, that's me, I really want that. But when a person feels, I really want that, the sense of self from which they are deriving I, me, the sense of myself, that sense of self is a derivative. Now, what does a derivative mean? It means it is an extract of what? You see, here's how the one who wants remains in charge of our life. When you are out in life, you're talking to people, you're driving your car by yourself, it doesn't make a difference what the stimulus is, because the stimulus can be something that's outside of yourself, in the color of a shirt, the shape of a car, or it can be in the passage of a certain thought about something that happened when you were young. That in the moment of the stimulus, there is either an instantaneous corresponding pleasurable or painful feeling brought up with it. Nature, life itself, relationship itself is in a constant form of stirring, because life is constantly moving. We've shown that. Life itself is this perfect continual change. And it stirs inside of an individual a certain feeling, and the second that that feeling is stirred, comes next the wish to either possess the feeling or get rid of it because it's a problem. This is called pain and pleasure. Instantaneously, something in me wants, something in me doesn't want. Keep in mind, it hasn't named anything yet. It's just an unconscious stirring inside of a human being whereby they see something or hear something and suddenly there's a movement inside of them, and now that movement must, in order to sustain itself, find a self inside of you that agrees to it, period. So that now I want this. And what is it that I want? Can I want something that I haven't imagined? It's impossible. I can only want what I've imagined. The image that my mind holds comes to me from where? It comes to me from my own past. Because as I imagine that which I'm going to get rid of this always wanting, what has given me that which is going to free me from what I want? The self that is always giving me what I want. It can't reconcile itself. That the one who wants isn't a one at all. It is an order of our own nature in the unconsciousness of this mind that accepts the I that comes with desire as being I. And the I that's born with desire is not real I at all. Nor can that which it desires ever free it from desiring, because desire gives birth to it. It doesn't give birth to desire. Now I know I went a little bit deep, a little intellectual. Shake your head, take a breath. We'll get back to something a little more fundamental so you can understand it. But that's for those of you who want a little bit deeper understanding. So the point is this then. How? If I can see to some degree, and I'll ask you, how many of you can see in this 40 minutes that we've spent so far that if there's ever to be freedom, somehow or other, I'm going to have to accept everything that's given to me. How many of you can see that? All right. Now we need to understand how that works. That's what we're going to do. So take a deep breath. There are, in quotes, two orders of transformation. They are not really separate. One and the other are in a constant exchange, just like the river is in a constant exchange. The two orders of transformation are the transformation of myself and the transformation of the world. You cannot transform the world into anything right, true, and meaningful without transformation of self. So the order of things is transformation of self, then transformation of world. Not create new laws according to ideas of a perfect map that leads to a happy world, and then we'll be different human beings. We have seen unequivocally that that doesn't work. Transformation of self, transformation of world. Now keep in mind this simple idea. We're talking about how do I learn to accept everything that's given to me, and at the same time take part in the fundamental understanding that I have for the need for being a new human being and for the world to become better. Shouldn't the world be a better place than it is? We know it is, should be. But it's not. Why? Because we've fallen down on the first fundamental. So let's start with the first one, because we're talking about I am given to be, and then we're going to talk about I can accept what I am given to do. Do you understand the two ideas? First, we're talking about self. I can accept what is given for me to be. Now, how many of you have problems accepting being given what you're given to be? Of course. That's why we have blame. That's how we get around that. I can't accept what I'm given to be when you're negative. When you're negative, I can't accept that at all. In fact, I just flat don't want this moment. I don't want you. Stay away from me. Am I accepting what I'm given to be if I'm around people and they're negative and I run from them, or I try to figure out how to make lots of dough so I can isolate myself from everything irritating? Yes or no? I can't. How is it possible for me to accept what is given for me to be?
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org.
Now listen, first of all, to not accept it is insane. Proof. When you don't want what you have been given to be, what is it you don't want? Look, you're at home and a fear comes through you. You're alone, a worry rushes through your mind. You're with somebody and suddenly a great trepidation about them passes through you. I'm saying to you that we have to understand what it means to accept that. How do I accept that which I don't want? Please listen. Because you can begin to see that what you don't want isn't the feeling of the moment. What you don't want is the image. What you don't want is the feeling that gets stuck in your mind, like a river stopping in midstream, where now you're looking at this one spot that looks bad and you don't want that one spot. Look, you say, I don't want to accept what I'm feeling, what I'm going through. I don't want to accept what I'm going through. Can I ask you a question? Can you change? How do I say this to you? Can you change what has happened to you? Here, somebody says something I don't like. I'm full of feelings I don't like. I don't accept it. Can I change what has happened to me? Anybody think they can? But you do. You think you can change what has happened to you by changing the person. You think you can change what has happened to you by coming up with some other way to live, someone else to be. You can't change what has happened. What has happened has happened. The feeling you have felt cannot be changed. It can only be resisted as you are now. Think about this. See, this is what we say. When I don't want that feeling, what is the feeling I don't want? The feeling I don't want is the feeling I have, I don't want that. That's the feeling I have, I'm resisting this. And we believe that resisting a feeling we don't want is the same thing as changing it. Can you follow this? Here's a feeling I don't want. God, what if I fail? I can't accept that. I can't accept any of it. I have to resist that. Now, what resists that? And for that matter, what is the whole idea of failing anyway? Apart from someone who has said to themselves what it means to succeed. Oh, I don't think I'm getting through to you. Look, I cannot change any moment. I can receive it. And in receiving it, the nature that receives it through awareness actually is part of the change. Then my real life, the real river, it's one thing. There's no longer me apart from the movement of life trying to control the way it goes. I have found inside of myself that which can be in relationship with the full movement, but only when I receive the full movement. And here's the problem. To receive the full movement, I also have to be letting go of the full movement. Because that's what resistance is. Resistance is trying to stop the movement so that I can be further defined by how dark I am over what I don't want in the movement. Here's this perfect life, perfect movement, perfect purity, perfect energy, working itself out. And I can accept it all or nothing. That's why I said it's all or nothing. I must recognize, and again, this is the map. This is not the thing. Don't you mistake it. But we're talking about, we can see with our mind's eye, the proper light of ourselves, that there is this, of course I can accept what I'm given. All I have to do is receive it in the part of me that knows that what I am given is already past, already changed, already made perfect, because it's part of a perfect movement. But see, we don't want to feel certain things. We don't want to be anxious. Why? Because I've seen 1,000 commercials where you're not supposed to let them see you sweat. I don't want to be afraid. Why? Because real men aren't afraid. I want to be loved. Why? Not sure. Because then I'm not alone. I won't be alone. I don't want to be alone. Why? I don't know what to do with myself. I hate being alone. And so you have over and over and over again the fulfillment of that idea that when one resists what life brings and doesn't accept it, that all they're really doing is crystallizing inside of themselves this person. You are not a person. Yes, there is a personal life. It's part of the way we communicate to each other, but it has nothing to do with the communion with that real life that is in constant movement. So there's an order to these things. So as a person starts to look, it's all right. I can kind of see this. I'll make it out a little bit because there's been times. Have you ever had times where you just couldn't push it away anymore? Life kept bringing it and bringing it and bringing it. One day you couldn't push it away anymore, and you finally had to let it go. You had to let go of the person who was convinced they had to hold that in place, and you let it go. And suddenly, it's not just the thing that's changed, but I am changed now. Yes or no? I let it go. I have to die. I let it go. Wait a minute. Whew, you know, that's a lot better. So there's one fractional instant in the spiritual life of a person where they're shown that they're sitting and trying, as Vernon Howard, a great man, used to say, trying to sweep back the ocean with a broom. No, I accept it. Why do I accept it? Because now I understand, and I'll go back to it. I am not the conductor of the orchestra. I am an instrument in the orchestra of change. My true self is not a person. It is a great spirit. And it is part of a ceaseless flow in which the idea of good and bad only exists because in that flow has been born a certain creature given an imagination that has created itself in the name of itself. And there you have all of the problem. So I can accept what I'm given to be because if I accept it and see it, it's changed, and so am I. The river removes it. Oh, if you could only understand this. When you get bugged, when you get frightened, when you get worried, do you know why you stay that way? Because you freeze the river. The mind freezes the river. And that's what thought does. Thought is a fast freeze device. So I can see that now. I can accept. And how many of you can kind of see it? I said this is the map. This isn't the treasure. This is the map. This is a lot of hard work. To accept everything that I'm given to be. Because the last thing I want to do is what I'm given to be, unless somebody's flattering me. There's a poem for you. All right. So I can see that much, but I got a real problem with the other side of it. How can I accept what is given me to do? Because when I see something wrong, man, that's wrong. Are you saying I should just see something that's wrong and leave it at that? That can't be right. You're right. Can't be. But if I'm doing the first work, if I'm present to myself and I'm accepting what I'm given to be, then what I'm given to be and what I've been given to see, they're not separate anymore. And I see very clearly that this isn't right. Even practically, business, that's not right. That's not good. This can't work. Here's someone, they work for me, or I work for them, and I see there's something in the relationship that should be improved. I have a dear friend, and I can see they're destroying themselves. And while I won't enable them, I certainly am not going to let them kill themselves without having said something at a certain point. You know that things can't go on. You look at this world. See, this is the problem. A person looks at the world, they see that it is coming apart at the seams, and because they live from the person whose very nature is fear-driven, their best solution to the world that is suffering is to get more for themselves, separate themselves from it, so as if in separating themselves they escape the suffering. And they don't. Given what I'm given to do in the moment can only be as pure and as clean as what I am given to be. And if I accept what I'm given to be, without, there isn't, by the way, how many of you, or I can already see some of your minds, well, I'm given to be except here. This is the one exception to that rule. There is no exception. If there's any exception to the rule, then the rule is broken. It's all or nothing. With freedom is responsibility. But responsibility, listen, that you're not asked to shoulder, but that you're asked to be the instrument through which the true response and the reality that's changed by it is one thing. So that you begin to change yourself, and it's necessary and natural. You can see something, and you do, listen, you then do what you are asked to do in the change of your being. You know that you must say something. You know that that can't go on the way it is. But now it's not the person trying to change it to protect himself or prove himself. It is the intelligence itself that is changing the whole of the self, that wants the whole of the rest of reality, of nature, of subcreation after subcreation, to reflect that perfect chain of change. Look how beautiful it is if you can see it. When a person understands the true meaning of what it, of letting go and letting God, they start to realize, well, of course, it isn't I that's going to change this. Listen to me. If you go around and you're changing stuff, you're wrecking it. Because you will make it in your own image. That's what Frankenstein represented. The sewn together, misshapen pieces, things that are put together to provide life that isn't life at all. So it has been with us because we've been living from the wrong person. There is another person with a capital P. You may call it what you want. The speaker has no concern whatsoever for the word. And that one person, that great intelligence has a great story, and the great story is never not telling itself. And we can accept the whole of the story, because in accepting the whole of the story, guess what happens? We're not apart from it anymore. A completely different order of freedom, one that the mind cannot begin to imagine, because the mind, in order to imagine things, freezes things, stops things. But to live from a completely different order of ourselves, in which the principal concern is not with proving ourselves or changing things according to our ideas anymore, but instead, and you can do it right now as we bring the talk to a close, you spend it wide awake, letting life give you what you are, what you need to be, and what you need to see. And then in that light, in that awareness, taking natural part in all the necessary change that the rest of the physical world is intended to reflect through that perfection. That is the way to a great life and a great world. But again, do the inner work. Don't think the description is the same as the divine. They have nothing in common. Understand, work at this. Make an aim. I'm going to accept. I'm going to accept what I'm given to be. And if I do that, then you'll see that what you're given to do through that will never betray you or anyone else.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.